Tom Keegan and Matt Tate here for another Spodcasters episode brought to you by cars.lawrence.com. If you want to looking for a car or a truck, new or used, start your search at cars.lawrence.com. Matt Tate, getting to that point in camp where they're getting down to decision time. Charlie Weiss said he wanted his offensive line in place. I just want to get your state of the camp to this point. I'm going to ask you 7 questions. We haven't rehearsed this, and I'm just going to fire them at you, and you fire your answers.
Okay, that's good, because that'll help, because if you were just getting my state of camp, it could take 4 hours and 53 minutes.
Yeah, so. Always need to focus someone who is a compulsive talker.
Yeah, this will help.
But you love talking nothing more than you love talking KU football, so this is good, and you're the guy who's at every single practice, every single media availability, the portion of practice that you're allowed to watch. Worst receiving core in the nation the past 2 years, I'm going to say, from FBS schools. If you take a 2-year block, this is the least productive crew. So if there are 125 FBS schools now, give me a number on where this receiving core ranks.
Ranks or will rank?
Will rank out of the 125. So not necessarily statistically, just, I mean, where does this rank? Is it a?
Yeah, that's a good question. A really good question. My first instinct tells me top half.
Interesting. So it's a big climb.
It is. Yeah, it is. So, I mean, what's that, you know, top 60, something like that?
62 and a half.
There you go. Yeah, they're 62nd and a half. It's perfect. Exactly what I was going to say. I think top 50 is probably a little extreme just because they haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
But I think the upgrades, both in terms of personnel and also a huge factor, is the coaching. I mean, Eric Kesaw is so legitimate. There was a portion of the open practice on Saturday where they were doing some live offense and actually 11-on-11 type of stuff. And they were around the 30-yard line, and Kesaw, I was standing near him on the KU offense sideline, and he grabbed someone from the sideline, some other staff member, and said, "Okay, watch this." Might have even been an official that he said this to, but he said, "Watch this." He turned his back to the field. He had just seen the defense. The play hadn't been called yet, but he saw what the defense gave, what their look was, and he said to the official, "Here's what's going to happen. Derek Neal, true freshman, is going to run a crossing route, catch it right about where this other official's standing, yeah, and he's going to turn it upfield for a big gain." And so they snap the ball. He keeps his back to the action. He's not seeing anything. It was really cool to watch because he was like a kid on Christmas, just so giddy, waiting to see what he got, if he was right, if he was wrong. And of course, I heard him, so I kept my eyes on Derek Neal. I wanted to see, you know, first, does he at least run the crossing route? That gives him a chance to catch it where Kesaw said he was going to. First thing off the line, he starts crossing, you know, middle of the field, and he catches it in the exact spot that Kesaw said he would, turns it up, gets to about the 7-yard line for a 25, 30-yard gain. Kesaw exploded. He went nuts. He loved every second of it. But it was really cool to watch because that guy's only been here a few months, and he's already that locked in, not only on what his guys can do and what the offense is about, but obviously he's got a really good eye for what looks defenses are giving. And that was from the field level. I mean, if he's upstairs, forget it. You know, that he could see a lot. So,
because as we know, John Reagan, the offensive coordinator, will be downstairs because of his offensive line.
Right, right. Yeah, you asked about that last week, and that's, you know, that's always interesting. I know that's really interesting to you, but it's always interesting because
right. It's
such a different world up and down. But anyway, getting back to your original question, that – I think the coaching upgrade is huge, and I think the personnel with Nick Harwell, a proven Division I receiver, with Nigel King, a proven Division I receiver. I mean, right there, you're talking legitimate talents that have done it at this level. And then you take a guy like Tony Pearson, who had been this team's most, you know, dangerous receiving weapon the last couple of years, and now he's not having to be your number one guy. He's an additional guy. And he might end up being the number one guy. He's that talented, but he doesn't have to be anymore. So, 52nd.
All right.
Long answer.
52nd. That's good. Assuming Nick Harwell leads the team in receiving yardage, which I would think he will, having the history he has, Who's going to be second on this team in receiving yards? Yeah. Not as easy a question to answer.
Not at all. Not at all. Among all players or just receivers?
Receivers only.
Okay, because I think Mundine might have a real shot at that. Mm-hmm. But the second leading receiver on this team, I think Pearson. I think it'll be Pearson. Yeah, because I think Rodriguez Coleman was another guy that came to mind, especially because I feel like a lot of the balls he's going to catch might be big gains, 30, 40, 50 yards down the field. But I don't know that he'll get the volume.
Yeah.
You don't hit on those multiple times every game. So I think Tony's a guy that's going to get the ball a ton by design, and we already know what he can do in space. We already know how quick and fast he is. So just by the volume of it, I think Tony's second on that list.
First time that KU sends a field goal unit onto the field, whether it's against SEMO or whenever, who's kicking?
Yeah.
Duvick or Wyman?
Fantastic question. We were able to talk to Wyman before Saturday's scrimmage. And I say before because that's important. He was so confident. He's changed his style. Instead of the three steps back, two steps over that 90% of kickers do out there, he's got like a 1.5 step back thing. And it was something his dad helped him develop. He said that's made him more comfortable, more consistent, and more confident. And he sounded like a guy who not only has had a great camp, but he sounded like a guy who's matured a little bit and really believes and really wants the job. So I was impressed. And then we walk out on the field, and in the field goal portion of it, he misses four of the seven kicks he took. One of them was an extra point. He made that, but one of the seven was an extra point, including four straight misses. And some of it was on the snaps. They weren't good either, which is another concern in the kicking game. But he missed four in a row, and you don't ever want to see that. And I just couldn't help but think how crazy that was to have just talked to this confident dude half an hour, 45 minutes earlier, and then he's out there, can't buy one. He did hit one from 47 at the end. Maybe just a bad day, but
so the short answer is Duvick.
Well, then Duvick went out there and hit 6 of 7 and
right.
Looked fantastic. I mean, just pure, consistent. I mean, he drilled him. So it's a tough question because it sounds like Wyman had a really good camp until that point. But it's sort of as much as anything. Oh, what have you done for me lately? And if you're missing and you get in a bad rut late, then you probably do have to go with the other guy. So yeah, I think Duvick's got as good a chance as he does. As anyone,
You want the consistent guy for sure. The
right.
guy
right.
that you can make the field
And he
goal.
Just looked, I mean, his setup, his technique, I mean, he's got this awkward stance when he's waiting for the ball to be snapped, but it looks like it's almost machine-like, He's one of those guys. And Wyman even said this, they're different kickers, they're different styles. But Duvick's one of those guys that just looks like, gosh, you just – press a button and then all the motions happen and it's the same every time. It's like an assembly line. It's not, there's no human error there. It's just he's so locked into his fundamentals.
Okay, and now give me an updated guess on which running back leads this team in rushing.
Wow, that's tough. I watched the running backs for a little while. They all showed different things in some of the live offense and stuff. I mean, they it seems like a four-horse race. It really seems so close. They all look good, and they all look a little different. I've been huge on DeAndre Mann all off season, but I got to tell you, Corey Avery's really blown me away in what we've seen at camp, and he looked really good again the other day. This is a true freshman who has no idea that he's a freshman. I mean, he doesn't look at all like
right off the bat. He catches your eye, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's amazing.
He's thick for a freshman.
He doesn't look at all like
he's
afraid.
He doesn't look uncomfortable. His
right?
head's not spinning. His eyes aren't wide.
It's funny, too. Courtney Arnick, who went to the same high school as Corey Avery comes from, he remembered him as a freshman in high school. We talked to him just about this today, actually. And Courtney Arnick's a linebacker, sophomore linebacker.
Redshirt sophomore.
Yeah, this is his third year. Right. So he remembers Avery being up with the varsity when Avery was a freshman in high school. And, I said, what stood out about? I asked him, what stood out about him then? Because he said he could tell then that he was a good player. And he said, man, he just makes plays. He's just a gamer. And he's just one of those guys that goes out there confident, not afraid. I mean, this is a 14-year-old kid playing varsity
right.
Texas high school
Tells
football.
He's got great vision.
Exactly.
Great
so,
football IQ.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know that I'd fully commit to that as my final answer, but it's sure – trending that way. I mean, he looks like he could definitely be the real deal and get enough carries to win that answer.
That'd be wild. Which unit's the biggest concern? I think everyone would answer this question the same way, but yeah, let's see what you have to say.
We did a whole podcast on it last week, the offensive line, and that there's no doubt that it has to be. I think that the defensive line and what they're doing, they are smaller, but they're planning it that way, and they have an idea how they want to work that. So I think the offensive line, and as you mentioned last time, quarterback is – it has to be a question. I mean, Montel looked pretty good out there the other day, but it still has to be a question. But offensive line is just so critical to this team's chances for success. So I think they could surprise you. They could be really solid. There's some bodies there that maybe could, you know, really lock in and form a pretty good unit. But until we see it, until we know they've done it, you have to wonder if any of those positions are really that solid. And I like the guards. We've already talked about that. Smithberg and Nalu are both pretty solid, but you know they got to help others too. They're seniors and they got to step up.
TJ Millward, your thoughts?
TJ Millward, I think at this point, I think it's pretty clear that he's third on the depth chart behind Michael Cummings. Michael Cummings, I've heard from everybody I've talked to, has had a really, really nice camp. He's in an offense that fits him, finally.
Yep.
And he's showing that he can make some plays. And it's never been a question about his arm strength. He's got a huge arm. So I think Cummings looks to me like he's ahead in the number two job. And so I think Millward's number three. What stood out to me about Millward that I wasn't expecting was he might throw the best deep ball of any of these guys. He had in the open practice, he put some incredible touch on his deep balls and dropped them right in the basket. And I wasn't expecting that. I kind of thought of him as more of a mobile run around and make some short type of throws, but he looked really good there. I think just maybe physically and then experience wise, he's behind those two guys. I mean, it's hard to believe he would be behind Montel in terms of experience, but he is. I mean, Montel's played three more games than he has.
That's wild.
So even in that area, I mean, Montel's a much better athlete than a lot of guys on this team. But even in that area, the experience area, he's got the nod on Millward there too. So you never know. I mean, if you get into a situation where you have to start throwing deep balls, wouldn't surprise me if TJ could get a look, because it was a thing of beauty. He really put a nice touch, a very catchable deep ball, and we haven't seen that around here in a while.
He could be a surprise. You don't know.
Yeah.
If he's needed to play, and he's an interesting guy to watch. Best secondary since Tlaib and Harris for KU?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
So do I.
I think two reasons. One, when Chris Harris had a fantastic freshman year, and he's obviously become a phenomenal pro with the Broncos, but you didn't know that he was going to be a phenomenal pro, and you didn't really know what his college career was going to be like as a freshman. He had a really, really good freshman year, but you don't know that that's the kind of guys you have back there. And I just think that Dexter McDonald, Ja'Cory Shepherd, Kevin Short, that was one of my favorite things about Saturday, watching Kevin Short, actually watching him play. He was locked up with Tony Pearson in a lot of one-on-one type stuff, and Tony got the best of him in a lot of areas and made some really tough catches. But you can see that Kevin Short is a natural, instinctive football player. It doesn't look like he's thinking a whole lot out there. He's just playing on feel and instincts, and that's exactly what you want, right? I mean, from that position. So
absolutely,
I think that. Those guys right there as cover guys, and then Sendish and Johnson, two really, really good safeties. I mean, Johnson's the reigning Big 12 newcomer of the year. Sendish, by all accounts, is the leader of this defense, or the leader of the secondary anyway. And I think he's an underrated football player too. I think it's easy to call him a leader and a solid guy in that respect. And then at the same time, I think it's easy to say he does all the little things right, but I think he does a lot of the big things right too. He's a talented football player. He's one of the fastest guys on this team, and he's physical. He likes to hit. So I think this secondary is, they're in really good shape secondary-wise. And it's not just speculative either,
Right.
We've seen
D-line is speculative. We know that Stowers is really good.
Right.
We know that Reynolds is really good. We have a hint that Bolton could be good, but no, that's not speculative in the secondary. That's really good. And the linebackers.
Right.
I mean, they only use basically two linebackers.
Yeah.
If you call the buck a D-end, which he's kind of an outside linebacker.
Right.
But right there, that's not speculative. I mean, Ben Heaney's
Ben
terrific.
Heaney, Jake Love, I mean, those guys have made tons of plays in plenty of Big 12 games.
And they'll get challenged maybe from Kyron Watson, although it's kind of a tough thing to learn, linebacker for a true freshman. But he's obviously a sharp guy who is physically ready, and he could be a big surprise for this team.
He's one of those guys, another instinctive football player. He just looks like he's a natural out there. And the other thing that he's doing that's probably the smartest thing you could possibly do as a true freshman, that's attaching himself by the hip to Ben Heaney and learning every single thing that Ben does every single day.
Yeah, smart.
That's only going to help.
All right, Matt Tate, and I'm Tom Keegan, and thanks for joining us, Doug Kramer and the rest of Spod Nation. And this episode was brought to you by cars.lawrence.com, cars.lawrence.com. If you're shopping for a new ride, go to cars.lawrence.com.